session number 23378, reel 4.
On the previous tape, you had been discussing being transported on a train these many miles to prepare for the Syrian campaign. Can you tell us a little bit more about that experience, the actual becoming prepared for your first experience of warfare?
We were on the train, we did not know where we were going. But as time went on, we realised we were going northwards, back into Palestine. We kept going northwards until we reached Haifa. We were not told anything about what the future held for us. We were guessing amongst ourselves, perhaps we were off to Cyprus, but as time went on, that didn't appear to be a possibility. And finally it transpired that we were going to take part in a crossing of the border into Syria. There were no particular briefings as to what the general situation was, although we put two and two together and realised that the Germans could come down through Turkey and create a pincer movement from the desert and from the north, causing havoc on the canal if that were to occur. As day by day went on, we realised, or gleaned really is the correct expression, that our enemy would be the Vichy French, and the German planes were beginning to be landed in Syria itself. What limited time there was between the time fixed for crossing the border was spent in getting fit after a period of non-movement in the desert in the long train journey. There was opportunity to talk to the Jews in their settlements and their kibbutzes. They were very pleasant people. We were issued with maps. And finally, the plan that we were going to keep to emerged. There were three routes, it seemed, that the attack, the general attack, was to follow, one along the coast, one up the centre, and one over the extreme right. The centre was allotted to 21 Brigade, the 2nd 14th Battalion, as part of 21 Brigade, was to lead off. A prerequisite to the movement was the taking of a police post at Iskandaroon on the border. And this was allotted to a small part of the battalion to take. Once that was taken, the general advance started. A Company, the company which I commanded, was the vanguard of the battalion. Very pretty place, walking up the coast road, looking out to the blue Mediterranean, and on the right, as we moved, were the hills coming and gullies coming down from the mountain ranges, the Lebanon mountain ranges. We could see that to the right of us were the rocks and very little cover. And out to sea was out to sea.
As a company commander, what was your understanding of your your job at that time?
To continue movement up the coast road until we struck the enemy and then to engage them. We reached Tyre without opposition. Part of the battalion had moved in a bit of a right hook movement away from the coast, not very far. They were to take Tyre too, and we, A Company, got there before C Company, which is the one on the hook. Then the movement continued on to the Latani River, where the 2nd 16th had the job of making the crossing of the Latani River. They did it with the assistance of British commandos, who however struck grave trouble at the time. A Company of the 2nd 14th was detached to the 2nd 16th for the Latani River crossing and was held in reserve. That was to be the lot of A Company for quite some time, being detached from the main body of the 2nd 14th. The 16th had great deal of trouble in making the crossing of the Latani, but eventually they succeeded and the advance continued up the coast. The next town of any great importance was Sidon. And as far as I can recall, the advance continued quite successfully up to that point. But it appeared that there was trouble in the centre route of the advance of the division, where 25 Brigade was striking trouble at a place called Mersiaen and Dezine. And again, the 2nd 14th were diverted from the coastal job to assist 25 Brigade at that point, at Dezine and Mersiaen. A Company was in the van again, and eventually reached Dezine, where we were viciously attacked by aircraft, enemy aircraft.
You mentioned this earlier on with the Stukas. Was it at this point that you experienced your first contact with enemy aircraft?
No, that was on the coastal route between Tyre and Sidon, when they swooped down on us. We took what cover we could get.
And was this your first experience of combat?
Yes.
You mentioned earlier on that you didn't really often have time to sort of think of your particular situation.
Mm.
How had your first experience of combat affected you, do you think?
I issued to myself the obligatory expletives, and sort of thought to myself, well, this is a taste of what it's going to be. It's going to be interesting. And just continued on with the job. But no use worrying about it. What was going to come was going to come. After all, that was part of our training.
Around about the 13th, I understand, Sidon was undertaken. 13th of June. Tell us a little bit more about your experience there.
Well, nothing much, very much happened. It's a matter of wait and see. The next major move for us, of course, was through to through to Jazin and Pinajayin. We were in the banana groves there, and where we got a delivery of mail, the first mail from Australia. That, of course, was of great interest. But it was a... For us, it was... We didn't really have much contact with the enemy. It was mainly the 2nd 16th that had borne the burden of the actual fighting at Latani. And it wasn't until we got up to Jazin that we really came face to face with problems.
Tell us about that then.
The 2nd 31st Battalion of 25 Brigade were having problems, and we were put into the position, A Company was put into the position of being detached to be a reserve for them. And that was another example of being detached of other units of my company. Not an incorrectly hopeful way of conducting the war after feeling that you're part of the 2nd 14th Battalion to be detached to help others out. Anyway, it became necessary to take one of the major hills around the Jazin area. I think it was called 1284. And I was ordered to detach 9 platoon to take this, to assist in taking the hill. Other parts of the battalion having failed to take it already. The attack led by Jerry O'Day partially succeeded. And they suffered a lot of wounds and killed. And then all of a sudden, the battalion received orders to go back to the coast. That time, we were getting largely a lot of the way through June by that time, approaching July. And we learned when we got back to the coast that an attack was being planned to attack Timor. There were two river crossings along the coast road, one at Latani and the other at Timor. This was to be a brigade attack with the 2nd 16th on the left. Second 27th in the centre, and the 2nd 14th on the right. My company was on the extreme right. And I was ordered to take command of A and B companies to plug the road out of the coast to a place called Betadine.
Who were you taking your orders from at this point?
CO 2nd 14th Battalion. He got his orders, of course, from Brigadier Stevens.
Were you, do you think, receiving enough information, did you ever sort of feel that you were not quite sure of the full picture?
Certainly not quite sure as to the full picture of the overall operation. I had the full picture, of course, locally within the battalion. And as to the rest of it, it was pure guesswork and what might have reached us by gossip.
How did it make you feel to have this sort of level of uncertainty?
I don't think it mattered to us so long as we carried out the orders we received from battalion headquarters and we had our own little world to work on. The fact that the Germans were raiding Crete or Greece or somewhere else didn't matter to us. We had our own little cubbyhole to work on. So long as you did that efficiently and well, that was the end of it. The battalion is always the instrument that you're interested in. And if that's going well or badly, so you're effective proportionately. The approach march to take two hills which were necessary to take to secure the Beta Dean Road was a pretty rugged sort of thing, going down to a deep ravine and then up the other side. It was all done at night.
You were speaking about operations being done at night. How did this help your situation in relation to what was going on? Or make things more difficult for you in relation to...
Night movement is always difficult, especially in rocky country, rugged country, mountainous country. And it just slows up the way you do things. We were following a route which had been previously reconnoitred by two members of the I section, and they were excellent. They led us onto the exact spot where we had to go. It was a slow movement, providing you know where you're putting your feet and watching out for the rocks that move, taking you with them. It's all right.
What of the level of casualties at this point? You're mentioning late June.
We had very few casualties up to that point. There were some, especially over Tazim, we had lost a few. But our contact with the actual fighting was not that great.
In the instance that had been casualties, how had that affected the men that you were in command of?
Naturally, you regret the loss of a comrade, whether it be by wounding or dying. But here again, it's what you have to do next. It takes over. It's only momentary that you have this feeling of loss and regret. There's no room for sentiment in war. It's either you or the other, the enemy, that maybe your turn next.
People also talk of the situation where you're not really ever able to, well, it's certainly not recommended that you make very close friends within the company, within the battalion.
Never heard of that before. I think on the contrary, unless you have that bond between you all, you can't operate as a close-knit unit. No, I wouldn't wear that one.
In relation to the possibility that your close friend might not make it?
Well, that's always on. And you and your close friend know that. And there have been many situations that I encountered during the whole of the war where somebody alongside me has either been wounded or killed, and luckily it missed myself. And I've had an occasion where a very close friend from pre-war days was killed in an operation. And you're sorry, you feel the loss momentarily, but events take over. It's not until you're able to, out of battle, to make a moment, have a moment of reflection that your mind goes back to those circumstances.
In relation to your position, what sort of pressures did you feel yourself under at that time, particularly at times when comrades had fallen?
The pressure is no more and no less than a commander of any standing has when he's in control of men in battle. That's always a pressure. Because anything you might do or might not do can reflect on their safety and the success of the operation which you're undertaking at the time.
So tell us then a little more of your experience of the Damour campaign.
The whole campaign was about 6 weeks. The whole of the Syrian campaign was about 6 weeks. This was more or less over in a few days, so far as we were concerned, because we had two hills to take, one taken by A Company without opposition, the other one was taken by B Company with a little bit of opposition, and thereafter, apart from tanks trying to break through the roadblock which we established, there was very little to do except be on guard.
Tell us the experience of tanks trying to break through.
Well, they just come down and fire on you. See a roadblock, and if you've got your anti-tank defences set up, and you just fire when you feel it's right to fire. And they were driven off. But even if the enemy are not attacking you, when you're in a battle position, there's always the risk of them attacking you. So you're always on guard, always alert, always fearful. I don't mean fearful in the sense of fearing, but always concerned, that's the better word, that something might happen.
The opposition had obviously, to some degree, taken you by surprise. There had been this thought that they would fall quite easily.
You're speaking generally?
In relation to opposition, the Vichy French.
Oh, yes. It was thought that they would give up, that they'd been infiltrated by Germans, and they were hard not to crack. The fact that they were formerly allies didn't mean a thing. They were there to secure Syria. But don't forget there was oil coming in from Iraq through there. And that was an important factor that they wanted to have Syria, not only for the oil, but also for the position vis-a-vis the canal in Egypt, Cairo.
As I understand, sickness, apart from the people being wounded, sickness had played quite a large role in the casualty list. Am I right?
Not so much as in the jungle, where you have a ratio of about 3 to 1. Every casualty, more people go sick through tropical disease. But no, there wasn't too much of sickness. There was the usual tummy upsets and things of that description. But I can't recall men going sick on the way to hospital.
To what degree had you been aware of people like Wilson, for instance, and Laverack later on?
Laverack, of course, we knew as our divisional commander, and I knew of him by reason of pre-war service in Australia. But Wilson I'd never heard of. At that time I had. Of course, I've read about him since. But higher commanders, they were just names at my level at that time. Blamey, of course, we knew.
What were the attitudes towards Blamey at that point?
Oh, he was our commander and he was an Australian standing out for us, so rumour had it, at my level. And he was all right.
What of people like Wavell?
He was a name to us. An Englishman, good soldier, had success in India, I believe. And he felt secure with the high command, I think. Didn't worry us, the politics of the game didn't concern us at all.
The fact that the Vichy French were being called sort of collaborators of the Nazis, of the Germans. Did this concern you at all? The reasons why they may have been collaborating with the Germans, for instance?
That was of interest to us, but they were still the enemy. But it was of interest to us how it all came about.
On July 12th, Dentz was to surrender.
Mm.
What did you know of that particular occurrence?
The next day we as a company were going to attack a place known as the German Hospice, and we made plans to do that the next day, and all of a sudden we were told that there's likely to be a surrender the next day, and the attack did take place, of course. We remember news of the surrender coming through, but yet we were fired on by the French. That was a lesson which I was to carry with me right through the war. That's when the Japanese were going to surrender. We kept our battle formations going. If we'd lost anyone after that surrender through French fire, we would have been bloody annoyed. It was difficult for them, I suppose, to get it through to everyone. There have always been those that said, they can't do this to me, I'm going to keep on firing. It's understandable. But nevertheless, if the game's off, you want it to be really off.
In relation to the whole campaign, you mentioned 6 weeks, roughly. How did you see the success then?
The success was great for two reasons. One, we had achieved what the higher command wanted us to achieve as an Australian force. And two, the battalion had stood up to its first test of battle remarkably well. It was because of its ability to prove itself in that way, was to show itself later on in 1942. Without that testing of us, we wouldn't have been able to do what we did later on.
People talk of the necessity of the campaign today, but I presume at that time you didn't question it.
No, never. It was an obvious thing to do. Especially when you thought about it. But as I said earlier, we didn't know why we were doing it. But when you thought about it, it was quite obvious. After all, it was a simple diaphragmatic thing, wasn't it? Cutting bits of open and cutting out in the centre, all those things that mattered to the enemy and to us, the Allies.